Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Jessica Frew is joining us. Jessica is a speaker, coach, author, and advocate for women breaking free of expectations and rewriting the rules for their own happiness. Today, Jessica and I will be discussing her new book, Shove Your Shoulds, The Shoulds We Live By and How to Break Free from Them, Why Women Often Lose Their Identity in Marriage and Divorce, and How to Reconnect with Your Intuition and Make Decisions for You. Welcome, Jessica.
Hey, thanks for having me, Heather.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to see you again. You are a repeat visitor to our show, and it's so nice to have you here to talk about your exciting new book.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, for our listeners, Jessica, would you share a little about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Of course. So I always say my name is Jessica Frew, obviously, and I am a mom, a stepmom, a wife, an ex-wife, and a bold action taker. And I help women understand how to utilize their decision-making to work for them, especially during like big transitions in our lives. And I started doing this work and kind of realizing the power of this when I went through my own divorce. My ex-husband came out as gay and then ended up having an affair with a man when we had a two-year-old daughter. And so we really had to rethink what our lives would look like. And there was a very clear path we'd been told we should follow. We were raised in a very conservative Christian religion. And that served us for a really long time until we got to this place where it's like, okay, first of all, Steve's not supposed to be gay. And secondly, we're not supposed to get divorced and you're supposed to make it work and power through. And we had to go through this process, both of us alongside each other, of deciding, what do we want this to look like now? How do we embrace what is in our life and who we are as we navigate divorce and this total, 180 of what we thought our lives were going to look like? And we had to leave a lot of the should behind of what we'd been told this should look like, of how you should navigate divorce. There were a lot of people that were like, you should be angry and you should be bitter and pissed and like carrying all of these things. And I was like, I can feel those. And also, I'm not going to carry them with me throughout my life. I do not want that for me. I don't want that for my daughter. And so how do we really get clear in stepping into that identity and make it something that's positive and not something that just constantly has to hold us back or hold us down in life? And as I continued forward and shared more of our story of like what Steve and I had been through, people were just really curious, like, what is this? Why are you doing this? How did you navigate this? And so I understood that there is this process that we go through of unshoulding our lives, of releasing what we've been told our life should look like to embrace something that feels really good to us. And I've been coaching women for 5-6 years now and helping them and supporting them in this process as well. And I was like, I want to be able to connect and support more women. So I decided to write the book so that more people have access to this process. And it's just a starting point to help you start unshoulding your life.
Well, and that's great. I'm so excited to get into this because you hear that a lot. We all know, we've all been told what we should do. And we all have in our head, I should do this, I should do that. So let's start here with this one, because it's a powerful question. When's the last time you made a decision just for yourself without running it through the imaginary committee of your mom, your partner, your church, or even your childhood piano teacher? All right. So why is that such a powerful question?
Yeah. I mean, I think it gets you thinking about, okay, when is the last time I made a decision for me? I speak to women often who are like, oh, I am a good decision maker. I make decisions so fast. And I'm like, okay, that is awesome. And are you actually making them for you and based on what you want and need? Or are you really good at making decisions based on what you know is expected of you? What you know these people in your life are wanting you to do and what they think you should do. And so there is this, I mean, it's very subconscious, I think, a lot of times where we are running it through that committee in our heads as we are making a decision. What is my mom going to think? What is my partner going to think? What are my kids going to think? What is X, all of these people going to think? And so we have to become aware of that. I always say, just as in like a 12-step program, the first step is becoming aware. We have to acknowledge that we are doing this. That yes, I may be a really good decision maker. I might make them quickly and all of those things, but am I actually making them in alignment for who I am and what I want and need? Or am I just really good at knowing what other people want and expect to make those decisions quickly?
And that creates a pause, right? When you're having a conversation, it's like, well, let me break it down and think about that, because you get so caught up in your life and also I think in patterns. And maybe we're making decisions, but then to go in and consciously look at what is motivating that decision. That's not something that I would say most of us do unless prompted to, unless really looking at it, right?
And
So go ahead.
go ahead. And that's the thing is, like, we're making probably 32,000 conscious decisions a day. Like, that's kind of what they've averaged out is what we're making. And those are ones we're thinking about, not just the subconscious things that are constantly happening. And how many of those are just on autopilot? And some of that is good. We want some things to be on autopilot because it's too much to think about. But also, we need to kind of check ourselves in these. Take that pause to say, okay, am I doing my hair because this is what I've been told is pretty? Or am I doing it in a way that feels good to me? Am I dressing for me? Or am I doing this because it's been told me, like I've been told this is what I should wear, this is how I should look? And taking those moments to really think about it and be like, maybe not. Maybe I'm living into just the expectations instead of listening to what is on my heart.
Okay, so let's, and that's just really profound. I think a lot of us are gonna be like, huh, we're gonna examine the next time I'm like, doing my hair, I'm sure. Now let's talk about shoving your should. Like, let's start with what exactly is a should?
I always think of should as that moment that we get to identify that we are placing judgment on ourselves. So typically when a should pops up, it's such an easy way to say, oh my gosh, there's a moment of judgment here. I should want this. I should do this thing. I should go for a walk. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be happy. I should be content. This should be enough. I shouldn't want more. Like all of these little moments, and they can be little things or big things, depending on how you look at that. But it's just such a simple way to identify that and to let it be seen. I give women often a challenge I call a should challenge, where I encourage them to identify one should a day. So, where is this popping up? I should go to church. I should do X, Y, and Z. I should be the, Pinterest mom, whatever it is. Like, what is one should that comes up? And just let it be seen. Acknowledge it, let it be seen. And that's where we start, is just identifying these shoulds because they are signals that there's preconditioning there or judgment that we're placing on that activity, that we have to do it. It's something we feel like we have to do when really it's probably not. And we need to evaluate that to make sure it's actually in alignment with who we are and what we want.
Now, who teaches us these? Where does they come from?
I say we are the first person we are taught not to trust. And so at a very young age, by well-intentioned adults in our lives, could be parents, could be teachers, whoever's influential in our lives, we are told things like, it doesn't hurt that bad. It's not that big of a deal. You shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't want that. Don't dress that way. Don't do this thing. You need to do X, Y, and Z. And again, this is done out of a desire to keep us safe, a desire to help us fit in, a desire to do all these things. But ultimately, it shuts down what is inside of us. We're, as little kids, we're like, oh, my body is telling me this hurts really bad, but my mom, who I love and trust, is telling me it doesn't hurt that bad. So I must be wrong. And so we internalize this and we disconnect from what our soul, what our emotions, our intuition are telling us, and what our physical body is even telling us. And we say, I'm not right. Like, I need something externally to tell me what is right for me, to tell me that I'm okay, to tell me what I need to feel, how I need to look, how I need to dress. And I mean, think about like that amplifies when we hit teenage years and we are desperately trying to fit in. And there's certain sports you should play, or you need to play a certain instrument. You need to wear these shoes. You need to do all these things. The voices just keep getting louder and louder. And I think of like teenagers today, and they've got social media and all of these things that are even expanding that voice of what they should do. So it starts very young.
It does. And as you were talking about, it makes sense. Okay, the when you're growing up and the thing, so you should do this, and you're in school, and there's just all these rules, all these things all the time. You're too loud, you should be quiet, right? You should not be disruptive, you shouldn't ask stupid questions, which is like the best kind of questions to ask, right? Because otherwise, how are you going to figure it out? But now, as you were talking about social media, okay, well, the influencers, well, why do they call them influencers? Because they're telling you this is what you should use, this is what you should do, this is how you should look. It's a lot of stuff coming at us all the time
All the
on that.
time. It's constant and it's really hard. I mean, like, think of us, especially as women. We are told what our bodies should look like. We are told that we shouldn't age, that we should like all of these things. The messaging is so loud that we have to go through a process. If you want to be connected to your intuition, you get to go through a process of figuring out how to silence or shove those shoulds so that you can hear what is innately in you and given to you to act on, to do, because I firmly believe we're all here for a unique reason. We all have unique gifts, but all of those shoulds are silencing that. And the connection that we then create with ourselves when we silence those shoulds, we then get to take that and be deeply connected to our purpose, to our work, to our families, to anything that's important to us that we care about. When we create that deep connection back to ourselves, we get to feel deeply connected to those things.
Yeah, I love that. Now, many women listening may feel like they've done everything right. They followed the rules, checked all the boxes, tried to be good, grateful, successful, and yet they feel stuck. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's because they're not listening to their own intuition. We feel stuck because we're not listening to what is being placed on our heart. We are just living into that path. We are following the things we've been told. And I mean, I was so straight edge in almost every way you can think of growing up. I was very by the book, except like I always had weird hair and clothes. But other than that, like I was doing the things right. I was following that path. And then I marry this man who is gay. Like, what? This isn't what's supposed to happen. This isn't
Hey.
how my life is supposed to look. Were you gonna say something?
No, because I'm sure you're just like,
Yes.
shocking for you, right? You've done all the right things, and then what happens?
And so I think when we get to that point where we feel stuck, it's because we're forcing something that isn't right for us anymore. We're forcing something that isn't, and I don't even like saying right, like what's
Yeah, I
best for
know.
us. Because we get so hung up on like what is right and wrong and good and bad. And that is placing judgment on it as well. And I'm like, what if it's just neutral? Besides like the extremes, I acknowledge that on the extremes, there are definitely things that are innately wrong and all of that. We can acknowledge that. But in the day to day, there is very little that is actually right or wrong or good or bad that we want. Most women that I know are not wanting horrible things. They are wanting good, beautiful things for themselves, for their families, for their lives. And they are stuck because they won't acknowledge the thing that is on their heart. And so they just sit in it because there's fear or there's whatever on the other side of that. There's fear of what people are going to think. There's fear of the action they know they need to take. Maybe it is that divorce. Maybe it is speaking up and setting boundaries in their relationship. And that feels scary because who knows what's going to happen? Is my partner going to accept me? Or are they going to be like, who is this? Who did you become? So I think that's where we really find ourselves stuck is when we won't acknowledge what is on our heart and what we need. And it's going to get louder and you're going to feel more stuck and more overwhelmed and unable to act the longer you sit in it.
I think that I know that resonates with me and probably with so many of our listeners. And let's talk about like this conditioning. So much of this conditioning, be good, do what's expected, sacrifice yourself. You need to put your family first, your children need to come first, and a lot of that is reinforced by religion, patriarchy, and authority figures. We've been taught, a lot of us, to trust. How do we start to unravel these deep ingrained thoughts?
Yeah. And this is the part where we go back to we are not going to judge ourselves for having this conditioning because it's not your fault. Like, All of these systems were put in place. We are here. We are in it. We are going to acknowledge it and we are going to move forward. So in my decision-making process, the first step is to be gentle with ourselves. So we are going to start acknowledging where we're shitting on ourselves. And in that process, we are going to be gentle with ourselves as we do that. We're going to say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I'd been carrying this. And I'm ready to release this thing. And oh my goodness, I didn't realize I was beating myself up constantly about this. And so we go through and we learn how to be more gentle and kind with ourselves, which isn't something we were taught. We weren't taught to do that. We are taught to push through, to keep going, to do all of the things. And so it's not natural for us to be kind and gentle to ourselves. We always hear like, talk to yourself like your best friend would talk, or you would talk to your best friend. I'm like, okay, but how do we actually do that? And so in the book and in my coaching stuff, I really go into how you learn to be gentle with yourself. And I say this is like 60% of the decision-making process is just understanding the shoulds and how to be gentle with ourselves in that. I will say when you start identifying shoulds, you journal about it. Journaling is huge. Writing something out makes a big difference. It helps you gain clarity. And as Brené Brown says, clear is kind. If you can be clear with yourself, you can be kind with yourself. If you can be clear with other people, that is being kind. And we think that if we're clear with other people, we're not being kind. That's not true. But we have to learn how to rethink what that looks like. And so when you journal without judgment and you journal without logic, which is very hard to do. But whatever is at play here in this world is speaking to you in logic that isn't, I mean, our human brains can't really understand it. But everything that I have acted on where I didn't let logic take the wheel has come out for me in the most beautiful ways where I have trusted that inner knowing of like, this makes no sense that I'm going to do this. And yet it feels completely right. I mean, I went to dinner with the man my husband had an affair with before I moved away because I was like, okay, if he's staying with this person, I want to know who he is because my daughter's going to be around him and all of these things. And I look back at that and I'm like, who did you think you were? To be able to handle this and to do it. But it felt best for me at the time. And it gave me so much peace because the man he had an affair with was the nicest man. And I was so glad Steve had him. Like it was such a weird experience, but it gave me understanding and peace and calm because I knew who he was. I still loved my ex-husband. I wanted what was best for him. I knew he had a support person. And also, when my daughter went to stay with them for 2 weeks as a 2.5-year-old, I knew I could trust this man deeply because I had been in his presence and I felt who he was. So I think that's an important part is to really, well, it is key, is to learn how to be gentle with yourself and to understand that who you inherently are and what it is you want, it's not wrong. It's not bad. It's nothing that you were taught it is. It's just who you are and it's beautiful. So that again takes like 60% of this process. And it's huge. It's huge. It's a big step.
Well, you know, and I think that, you know, one, as women, we carry so many roles, you know, daughter, sister, wife, mother, fixer, peacemaker, homemaker, baker, worker. You know, there's so many things and it can be exhausting. It might, I don't, I'm not gonna say might, but it's a challenge to, I would think, to say, all right, wait, I have all these roles, right? But who am I? Who am I? What do I want? How do I want to show up in all these places? And that's even like before we start talking about a divorce, which then is going to shake everything. But like that takes a lot of, I think, courage and willingness, like you said, just to really understand who you are, because I think a lot of us can get so very lost in all the roles that we play.
And this speaks to two things. So this is where the strength really comes in. When you look at strong, courageous women that you admire, this is why they are strong and courageous, is because they are willing to feel. They are willing to say, you know what? I've been carrying this identity that I am the peacemaker and it is not serving me anymore. I can still be a peacemaker and have boundaries. I can still be a peacemaker and speak up for myself. But it's understanding that identity piece and how we release what we think that means about us to embrace what it actually means about us. And I think about, like, Pinterest mom. If we carry that identity, like we are showing up in all of the things, we are doing it all perfectly. And this is why we are tired, is because we're putting all of these things that we have to do or we should do to be that mom and to be that employee, to be that entrepreneur, to be whatever it is we're carrying. And I'm like, what if we stopped dropping some of those identities? What if we started putting less weight on what it means if we don't show up perfectly in these things, because none of us are going to. It's not possible.
It's just an idea we have in our head that we're already doing it perfectly anyway, because we're not. I mean, you might get one a day, like, hey, I nailed that. But like, we're not showing up every day all the time, no matter what we tell ourselves, right?
And so when we can start releasing some of that and embrace what is and what we actually value and what identities we actually want to take, we get to feel peace and calm and joy. And we're not tired because we're embracing what is meant for us instead of just embracing what we've been told we should do. And this is actually step two in the decision-making process. You led into it perfectly. I call it be humble. And I'm not talking about being a doormat. I am not talking about being walked over. I'm not talking about any of that. I am talking about being humble enough to release our egos and what we think it means to show up in these different roles so that we can understand who we truly are. It's a learning process. What are my actual values? And how do I live in alignment? Are these things that I'm living in alignment? And I think, like, my values, and two of them I can trace back to when I was like a teenager, a young child, they have been the same. Two of them have. And they're love and boldness. And for me, that meant showing up in love for myself first and love for other people and doing that boldly in a way that felt in alignment for me, that was authentic to who I was. Because at a young age, I realized how much space that created for other people to feel safe with me. And I craved that. I love that people feel safe with me and they tell me things. My husband and I went and played pickleball with this couple the other day, and we came home and I was telling him something about, like, that the wife had shared with me and all these things. And he's like, "How did you know that? Like, we were there for this long. How did you get that deep with her?" I'm like, "People tell me things because they feel safe because I show up as myself. Therefore, they are safe to show up as themselves." So, understanding who we are at our core and going through this, like, process of really getting clear on what does that voice sound like? Who is it in there? And I always tell my clients, like, after we are in a session of talking about being humble and our values, like, you have to go act on one thing now. I call it a trust your gut challenge. And I'll be like, you act on one thing a day that you want. What do you want to eat for lunch? Don't think about what anybody else wants. What do you want for lunch? What do you want to put on your body? What is your body telling you you need today? Is it that vigorous workout you had scheduled? Or is it saying, I just want to go for a walk? Or maybe you were just going to go for a walk and it's like, let's go run. Like, trusting those things and acting on them, because it starts building trust with yourself. It starts building this safety within yourself to act on what you feel. And we're starting with small things so that we don't send our nervous system completely out of whack. We want to embrace these things on a level that feel doable and that feel like, okay, and we create that momentum. Confidence doesn't come from more information. And I think about this with divorce all the time. I need all this information. I need to know every detail. I gotta, like, keep researching before I take any action. I'm like, okay, no, you get the information you need when you take the action. Then the answers come. Then you build confidence and you're like, oh my gosh, now I have this information. Now I know how to take the next step and the next step. So confidence comes when we act. But we first take this process of, like, One small thing a day. Like, what is one small thing that you hear in yourself that you want and need, and you act on it? Or if you can't act on it that day, you schedule it so that you know when you're acting on it, so that it's there for you.
I like that a lot. Now, let's talk about, like, for many of our listeners, this is women winning divorce, so they're going through a divorce, contemplating it, or have been through one. And do you find that many women have an identity crisis during divorce that is likely because of their shoulds or because the voices, many expectations of their ex?
Yes, 100%. And I always think of divorce as the opportunity. I'm like, it sucks. It was hard and emotional and all of these things. And also, this is your moment to find who you really are, to get deeply connected to yourself. And it's a lot to unpack because not only have we had this conditioning since we were young, often when we're experiencing divorce, there's betrayal involved, or you've been gaslit, or there's manipulation, or you're dealing with a narcissist and you've been told for so long, you are the problem. You are the problem. And so maybe your intuition was telling you things aren't right for a long time, but you were gaslit into believing that that was wrong, that no, you don't know, everything's fine. This is a you problem. You're too emotional. You're too whatever. And even though usually as we're divorcing, we have the proof now that we were right, that something was wrong, there is still this voice in us that we accepted in those years that we were married. We accepted that voice that we were wrong. We told ourselves, like, once again, like, oh no, I can't trust what I'm saying because he's saying this. And so this is the opportunity to really, I always say we're gonna own our badassery. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but like, to step into that of who you are and be boldly yourself. And when I say be boldly yourself, I'm not talking about showing up being loud or aggressive or whatever. Or like, I mean, I had a shaved head for 5 years. Like, I'm not telling you to do it like I do it. I want you to be boldly yourself in those calm moments and those big decisions, because then you get that peace and calm, even when things are like, what is happening? That's the one thing I got, like, people commented on the most when I was getting divorced. They're like, how are you so calm? How do you feel? Like, how are you so at peace? I'm like, I am still feeling all of the big feelings, but I am calm and at peace because I know this is the best way forward for me. I know this is going to lead to something better for me, something better for my ex, something better for my daughter. And I don't know how that's going to look, but I'm going to keep trusting this calm as I move forward. And so even when we're in the thick of this, we get to when we are being boldly ourselves, there is a calm and a safety that comes that we've been craving in the relationship, but we didn't have. We thought maybe we had it, but now we get to have it as we leave this relationship.
Which, in particularly one, I think there are so many reasons that that's a great thing. Obviously, if you have children, it's great, but it's just great for you in general because, you and I look at divorce the same way. It's just an opportunity to take what has been presented to you to create something new, different, if you want, and hopefully better. But it can be a challenge, but isn't that really what all of life is in some form or another, is a challenge? And here's an opportunity that I think over time, like I think the longer, the older I get, right, the more I realize, the more I listen to my intuition or even just understand who I am, I can more clearly communicate that to others, which makes more fair and kind to them, right? When we don't say what we really want or need, and then we're disappointed because we weren't here. And then, it's really not fair to your partners, your friends who are like, but that's what you said. So how do we not take you at your word, right? Like what you told us.
I mean, it's the same, like, creating that trust with ourselves. We have to build it slowly on small things, and it's same in other relationships. If we are going to build trust with other people, we have to do these little things that create that trust. We have to be honest. And otherwise, we get sucked into that self-betrayal, and it leads us to bitterness and anger and resentment. And ultimately, we're not actually bitter and angry and resentful at somebody else. It's actually us we're bitter and angry and resentful at for tolerating this behavior or for not speaking up about what it is we want and need. But we like to play a blame game. It's totally natural. It's very real. You are not bad or wrong for doing this. We want somebody else to blame for why our life is not going how we plan, or why we're pissed, or why we're angry. Like, we crave that. It's real. And so when we can start releasing that desire to blame, that desire to point the fingers, and instead take ownership of our lives, we get our power back. And it's exciting and it feels good and it gets us closer to where we want to be.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Like, as you know, your clients and individuals go through this process, they are, they're obviously something has caused them, which is great. Whatever it is, to be like, all right, I need help. I want to get rid of these shoulds. And what kind of amazing things have you seen women really be able to do or enjoy or just transform when they are able to really incorporate this and live, as themselves and more
Yeah.
authentically?
I mean, I've watched women come out from just the craziest situations in their marriages and divorces and dealing with exes who were manipulating and narcissistic and all of these things that we hear about and step into their power. Like, I've seen them be at peace, even though they are co-parenting with some of the hardest people I have seen. Like, I have one client I think of specifically, and she had lost her first husband suddenly in an accident. Her second husband came out as gay, and then I get a lot of clients who go through that. He had come out and they had opened up their marriage and tried to make things work, and it was just a mess and not working for her. And there were so many deep emotions with that. First of all, losing a husband. Secondly, thinking this was going to be, her second one and done. It's going to be done this
Yeah,
time. I
right.
found something. And then having to navigate this, giving up so many of her personal boundaries in that process. And I remember when she left, like my last retreat that she came on with me, and she was like, "Jessica, I'm excited to wake up in the morning. Like, I am at peace every day. And I know how to handle him. I know what boundaries to set. I know how to create structure for my daughters and hold space for them as they're navigating the relationship with their dad without trying to fix it." And things like that to me just blow my mind. That yes, there is still, because they're like, "Well, I have to deal with this guy the rest of my life, I'm like, "Sure."
Right.
And you get to choose how much of this person you let into your life. You get to decide how much access this person has to you. And I say this like, I mean, people look at me and my ex-husband and they're like, "Yeah, but not everybody can have that." I mean, we are still friends. I am his go-to person when things get hard in his life and all of that. Like, we are very connected still. We have a very different relationship with my husband's ex. So I know that it can't always look like that. Like, you can't be friends and have that, but you can still have peace because you are setting those boundaries, because you are coming through things. I mean, we have been through court battles and things with this woman that she just keeps throwing at us. And yet there's a peace and calm that we have found because we know who we are. We know our intentions. We know how to navigate dealing with her. How much energy are we going to give her? And honestly, to me, that is some of the bravest work that I've seen, not just in my own life, but with the women I work with, in how we establish that. Like, to me, that's.
No, that is. All right, I want to talk this a little bit, okay? Because like for our listeners, and before they go into the unshooting, I think we do need to understand, because like it doesn't mean we get to say, I'm not going to take care of these responsibilities
Yes.
because I've got kids. So I do have some responsibility, but
Yes.
it's all in the way you do it, right? Because I'm sure this comes up, right? If it's not like, you just leave,
Exactly.
but how do we balance that? How do you
Yes.
balance the got these responsibilities,
Yeah.
but then I have this list of shoulds, and how do I discern?
Yes. Okay. So one of the things, and I honestly think you asked me something similar last time. I was like, I didn't explain that well. It's funny because I don't remember that from many podcasts, but I do remember it from this one.
Oh,
And this is so, yeah. So I'm glad we're touching on this. Here's the deal, is in anything that we want in life, there are going to be things that we are going to do to get ourselves there that we're not going to love. Like, there's going to be things that are just part of the process. And so understanding which of those we hold on to and which of those re we release, because some of it is made up in our head that we have to do it or we should do it. Like, there are things like, I need to be in the classroom with my kid to be a good mom. That's bull crap. Like, you don't have to be the art mom to be a good mom. Instead of like putting all of these things on us that don't feel good to us, like, we want to break it down to what does actually feel good. And one of the things I think of in this example a lot is we were going through a court case with my husband's ex. And in this, she was accusing me of withholding food from the kids' lunches. They went to a school where lunch wasn't served. And so we packed them lunch every day, obviously. And I love feeding people. Like, it is a love language for me. I had lists in the kitchen of what the kids liked and what they would actually eat in their lunches and healthy options for those. Like, this is something I wanted to be good at. And the claim came from, supposedly, I gave Penny candy, my daughter candy in her lunch, but not them. And it was twisted that I was then withholding food from their lunches, and she was showing up at the school every day to check their lunches. So not only is this in court documents now that I'm withholding food, but also she is showing up every day to check the lunches that I'm packing for these kids. And so it's creating a lot of dissonance and like stress. Like, I'm waking up stressed to pack lunches for my family. And it's something I like to do. And so as soon as the kids transferred to a school where there was lunch provided, I told my husband, I am never packing a lunch for these kids again, not because I don't love them, but because of the stress that it's putting on me and the stress it's putting on them by having her show up and check. So I sounded like a real jerk in that moment. And it wasn't something I wanted to do because as a good mom, as a good stepmom, I should be providing this lunch for them. I should be catering to this, but it was doing nothing but creating conflict internally, externally, and everything. And so I set that boundary that I am not making lunches. Now, as the kids got older and things settled down, if they came to me and they're like, hey, will you pack me a lunch? I'm like, yes, I'm happy to pack you a lunch. I'm packing Penny's lunch. I'm packing your dad's lunch. Like, I'd love to pack you a lunch. But on the outside, that looked like a really mean thing to do. And it looked like something I should do. But it wasn't serving anybody. And so it's getting clear kind of on those things that, like, you know what? I need to release this. I'm pushing it. I'm making it about me because this is, it makes me look like a good stepmom. When really, if I released it, it served everybody so much better. Their mom wasn't showing up at school. I wasn't getting, like, I didn't have this pressure. They didn't feel this pressure to go between me and their mom. It was one less pain point. And so I think we have to look at things and kind of understand, like, if it is causing me internal angst and like stress and anxiety, then it's probably not something I need to be doing. There's a different way to do it. There are options that I'm not seeing. I just got to open up the little box I put myself in to see those options.
That's a great example. It really is. It's, you know, the, oh, you mean you let your kids eat school lunch?
I
I do.
do.
Yes, I do. And you know, and that's the funny thing. Sometimes, you know, you have all these things and then they come home and they never ate their lunch. That happened to me. And they're like, oh yeah, it was Chick-fil-A day. It was pizza day. You know, I mean, they're like, I don't want to eat whatever this healthy lunch. I want that. So we put all this pressure on ourselves sometimes, and it's really isn't helping anybody at all. We are, this has been such a great conversation, but I want to bring this up because this goes to something you say. You know, we often blame ourselves for not seeing the signs in our marriage, but you say that's not true. We did see the signs. We just silenced our intuition. So why do women do this, and how do they start trusting their gut again?
I mean, for years, again, we've been told that what is inside us can't be trusted. It's not safe. It's not what's right. We want to be the good girl. We want to be appeasing. We want to be people pleasing. I've never considered myself a people pleaser. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I am. Like, I think all of us have a little bit of it in us of where there are things we're doing to appease other people. And so I think if we can just admit that and see that and be like, oh, this was the moment I gave up my intuition. This was the moment I saw what was going on. And I allowed his voice or my own to convince me otherwise because I didn't want it to be the reality. Like most of the time, it's a reality we don't want. And so we allow that to be suppressed and pushed down. And the key thing in this, when we identify this and when we are open to seeing it, is that we don't beat ourselves up more. It's okay. You were doing this to protect yourself. Your brain wants to keep you safe. And so it's trying to say, like, oh no, I didn't see this. Oh no, I didn't know this. When really the knowing is there, it's just that we don't want to see it. And so we have to let it be seen. That is the first step back to trusting ourselves, is that acknowledgement that I did feel this and I did suppress it. I did allow somebody else to suppress that in me. And that doesn't mean I'm weak. It doesn't mean I'm bad. It doesn't mean anything. It's just real. That is the honest truth. You are not a bad person for that. Everybody has been there. We have all been there. But now I get to take that information and understand that that is now my power. By knowing that, by seeing that, by understanding that, I get to do something with that information. I get to move forward. I get to have power. I get to have a voice. I get to trust myself and create that safety within myself. And again, it starts with those little things. We are going to do it with little things so that we don't blow up our nervous system any more than it's already blown up, but we're going to embrace those small and simple things that show us we are safe to trust ourselves again.
Well, that's great advice, I think, because that's the best way to affect change without, like you said, blowing your nervous system up. It's just a little bit every time and build those muscles. Build that
Yes, it's
trust
totally a
in,
must.
yeah,
Yep.
keep building it. Well, I can't believe we've gone through our time. It's been a great conversation. But Jessica, before we go, our show is called Women Winning Divorce. And I'd like to ask you, what does winning at life mean to you?
Winning at life, it means showing up authentically as myself, being bold enough to speak up for what it is I want and need, and not letting what my life should look like determine how it does look like. And so I think that that for me is really what winning at life feels like. It's not like a constant high of joy or happiness. It's like a steady peace and calm that just feels good. I wake up and I'm like, I really like this life. Even when things are hard, it's just like I've welcomed that in. So I think that that for me is what winning looks like.
Awesome. Lastly, Jessica, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
Yeah, if you are interested in the book, you can go to shoveyourshoulds.com and you can pick it up there. But I am most active on Instagram. If you want to find me there, it is Hey Jessica Frew. Go give me a follow, drop into my DMs, and I will be sure to get back to you.
Wonderful. Well, we've reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Jessica, for joining us to discuss the power of letting go of our shoulds and living for ourselves.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Heather.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.